From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the Wildcast podcast. As always, Justin Spears, Dominic Pachaco, sitting in studio. Dom, how you doing, my man?
Pretty good. March.
It's March.
It's March. It's the best time of the year. How can't you be good this time of year?
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about
how good
certain teams are. By the way, if you're listening to this podcast, you are listening to it via the Wildcaster app. And if you are not listening to it via the Wildcaster app, you should. Download the Wildcaster app. It's available on the App Store and Google Play. Also, make sure to subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts. We're everywhere. And, I mean, you can also check it out on Tucson.com. Make sure you follow the Wildcaster on Twitter. Give us a like on Facebook and check out Tucson.com for all your Arizona Wildcats basketball coverage. So, Dom, we are now sitting in studio after what has been an eventful weekend of Arizona Wildcats basketball. And what everybody has been talking about is Sean Miller's farewell speech, to the seniors.
That's a very good way of putting it.
It wasn't really like a farewell speech. Well, I mean, they still got some more games left, but Sean Miller, after the ASU game, had a very emotional speech talking about Ryan Luther and Justin Coleman. He got choked up a little bit, and he really got emotional when talking about the Arizona fans and the support that they've given him over the last 10 years. It drew a lot of speculation nationally. A lot of the college basketball bigwigs had their input on what Sean Miller had to say. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But what I really want to get into is how Arizona finished off the season. They lost 72-64 to ASU on Saturday, and usually in years past, anytime Arizona has their final game, final home game of the season, and it's on CBS, it always results in Arizona cutting down the nets for the Pac-12 regular season championship. It happened last year. It happened the year afterwards, although they shared it with Oregon. They still won the conference, and this year had a different feel to it. Arizona not only lost. I take that back. 2017, they didn't win. They weren't cutting down the nets because Kadeem Allen missed a shot that would have beaten UCLA. So take back what I said about Arizona cutting down the nets in 2017. But last year they definitely cut down the nets. This year, not so much. They finished ninth in the conference. ASU came down and punched Arizona in the mouth. They swept the Wildcats for the first time in a decade. Dom, what was your biggest takeaway from that ASU game, or what was something that jumped out to you?
I think, much like the first time they played ASU this year, it was probably one of their better performances in Pac-12 play. I think the two ASU games, if you step back and look at Arizona's resume as a whole this year, obviously not a tournament team, but you look at their best games, they're probably three losses. I would point to both Arizona State games and the Gonzaga game. I think those are the three games that they really played. And I don't want to say they played well against ASU in this last game, because they almost played well enough to beat ASU, but that's not necessarily to say that they played good basketball. They played better. They turned the ball over a lot. Right. They were kind of sloppy. But they looked as good as they have in all of Pac-12 play, and that's more, again, as we've said all year, more of a testament to how bad Arizona's played more than anything else. But, yeah, I mean, you can look at that Iowa State game. That was probably their best win of the year was against Iowa State. UConn, they played pretty well. But I think three of the games that they impressed me the most were three losses, Gonzaga and both ASU games.
Yeah, the ASU game on the road in Tempe, I was impressed with, because
absolutely
they had a Chase Jeter who's just coming back from his back injury. That was his first game back. He came off the bench. Very limited that game. They were without Brandon Williams. And I said this ever since that game. Remy Martin went off for 31 points in that game in Tempe. And I always said, if Brandon Williams is playing in that game, I'm not saying that Remy Martin's going off for 31 points, but he at least would have been another body to throw on Remy Martin, which would have slowed him down. And Brandon Williams is a talented combo guard. He then comes back against ASU at home, and he didn't have any minute restriction. So he was full go. And Remy Martin still scored 27
Went
points.
Off. Yeah.
So Brandon Williams obviously wasn't a factor for Remy Martin. Remy Martin was going to do what Remy Martin always does. But in that game, while he was healthy, I don't know how healthy he is, but during that game, he did not play as aggressive as I thought he would because he got into foul trouble early on. And he kind of laid back a little bit. Some of the foul calls on him were very questionable. And then he fouls out. And then at that point, it was just all downhill for Arizona.
I'll point to that Oregon State game, too, last week when they beat when Arizona beat Oregon State down a few guys as games that really stood out to me this year. I don't want to say statistically they played well against ASU. They didn't. But they showed the kind of resolve that we've been missing all year. They showed, I mean, they fought, they battled. I mean, it was a hard played game. It was close from start to finish. Arizona State started to pull away a little bit. I think they had like an 8-point lead, maybe with, I don't know, at least midway through the second half. And Arizona came right back and tied the game up and made it close at the end. So it was different in the sense that Arizona was battling, and you haven't really seen that. When they go down in a lot of Pac-12 games this season, they kind of went down easy, and you didn't see a lot of fight out of them. The other thing I want to point out against the ASU in this latest ASU game on Senior Day, Sean Miller just keeps getting outcoached. You have a co-captain and Justin Coleman fell out on an unexcusable play. I mean, he gets the ball stolen, intercepted by, I think it was Remy Martin, who comes down on a two on one fast break against Justin Coleman, who, look, just get out of the way. You have four fouls. You're in the game with 5+ minutes left. Get out of the way. They're going to score. It's a 2-1 fast break. You're not stopping it. Maybe if you had three fouls. You have four fouls. You're a co-captain. The team needs you. If you're Justin Coleman, if you're Sean Miller, the team needs you to win this game. Yeah. You can't be fouling out with 5+ minutes left, especially when, who was it, Ryan Luther, who had already fouled out? Or
was it Luther?
Who was the other foul out player? Brandon Williams fouled out. You're right. Brandon Williams fouled out early in the first half, or early in the second half. So Arizona was already down a man, and that's partly. I mean, look, Justin Coleman's got to know better than that. He just wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
That's partly on Sean Miller, though. You know, when Justin Coleman comes back out on the floor with four fouls, you got to go, look, be smart, play smart. That should be the last thing you say to him as he's trying out on the court, and you're defending a 2-on-1, standing in the middle of the lane, swiping out of guys' hands. It just wasn't smart basketball. Again, what impressed me the most about Arizona in that game was that they fought and they battled, and they made it. They made a game out of it, which we haven't seen too often in their Pac-12 losses. Mm.
So Arizona finishes the regular season on a sour note. And now comes to the juicy part that everybody wants to talk about. What did Sean Miller actually mean when he gave his Senior Day speech? So, little backtrack here. Sean Miller grabbed the mic, stood in front of the McHale Center crowd of over 13,000 people. I say 13,000 because I feel like a lot of them left afterwards because they were just so upset about the result of the game. But Sean Miller talked about Ryan Luther and Justin Coleman, and he thanked them and their families for choosing Arizona, because when those two decided to join Arizona, they joined the U of A at what Sean Miller called a vulnerable time, because the recruiting class was depleted. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to touch Arizona with a 100-foot pole because they had no idea what was going to happen to Sean Miller. They had no idea what kind of sanctions or consequences or, you know, fill in the blank that Arizona is going to have to deal with for the next couple of years. So nobody wanted to really bother with Arizona. Then Ryan Luther, who is a Pittsburgh guy, decided to come over, play. You know what? If there's anybody I'm going to play for in the country, I'm going to play for the guy that is actually from Pittsburgh, like Sean Miller. And plus, I can get better tape playing for a team like Arizona than at Pitt, although Pitt's in the ACC for some weird reason. Then you have a guy like Justin Coleman. Used to play at Alabama, played at Samford, was looking for a team. hey, I'm looking for a team that needs a point guard. Arizona needed a point guard. So he decided, hey, let me go do my grad transfer year at Arizona. Those two guys joined Arizona, and I think Sean Miller, I don't know if he got emotional thanking them because it wasn't like the other seniors in the past where, you know, they came to Arizona because it was a good program. Sean Miller is a good coach. This right there showed Sean Miller that people actually would like to play for him. And I think that's why Sean Miller got choked up, because those guys took a gamble on him and the program when they didn't even have to. But here's my thing, and this is why people start to speculate. He didn't choke up when he talked about TJ McConnell on senior day. He didn't choke up last year talking about Dusan Ristić or Parker. He didn't. I mean, I'm trying to think about all the past senior days that Sean Miller has dealt with. And that's the first time where I really saw him get emotional. And you couldn't really see it from above, but I was right there on the court filming the entire thing. Sean Miller was tearing up. Sean Miller was tearing up. And people started to speculate. That is a goodbye speech. That sounded like a goodbye speech. Arizona fans started to get worried a little bit. They're like, oh my gosh, did Sean Miller coach his last game in McHale Center? And even national writers, broadcasters, media members were like, well, looks like Sean Miller coached his last game in McHale. That sounded like a goodbye speech. And then afterwards, to make matters worse, so coach, do you have any doubt about your future? Like, what was that speech about? And then he pulled out the old reliable. No comment. Or I'm not gonna comment on that. I mean, it makes people speculate more when you talk about your future and then you say I'm not gonna comment on that.
Yeah, that the whole goodbye speech. Here I'll read you just for reference.
Go for
it. If you didn't hear it, this is exactly what he said. So again, he clarified on Monday, and we'll get to this clip shortly here. He clarified on Monday that it was not a goodbye speech. He was just, you know, what he meant what he said. And this is what he said after losing to ASU on senior day this year. There is no place more magical than McHale Center. There are no fans in the world that are more loyal. It has been an amazing honor to coach at McHale Center for the last 10 years. Thank you for everything. That, to me, sounds like a goodbye on paper. You read that, it sounds like a goodbye. Then you watch him pretty much break out in tears while reading it. He didn't, I don't know if he actually cried. He choked up. He was emotional.
Yeah.
You could physically see he was emotional. And that's not, he does this every single year. He gets up on senior day, gives a speech. It's usually after winning a Pac-12 title and saying goodbye to some pretty storied players at Arizona sometimes. He didn't have that this year. Like you said, he didn't do this for TJ McConnell. I mean, he said goodbye to him, but he didn't choke up like that.
Yeah.
What stood out to me, and Justin, you mentioned it, were his comments afterwards. It's not that he said thanks for everything. The last 10 years have been a blast. It's that he got behind the podium after the game and said no comment when asked about it, which is what he said all year to questions about his involvement in FBI scandal. So, look, it would have been really easy for Sean Miller afterward. And maybe, look, if it wasn't a goodbye, it wasn't a goodbye. But it would have just as easy to nip all speculation in the
yes.
bud. It would have been so easy for Sean Miller postgame. If it wasn't a goodbye and he was asked about it after the game, it would have been so easy to just say, say what he said on Monday, right? Mm-hmm. Say what he said on Monday. Say, I meant what I said. This is a great, you know, we've hit some tough times this year, and seeing the 13,000+ fans that show up week in and week out, it means a lot to me. It means a lot to the team. It could have been so easy for him to say that, but he says no comment. And of course everyone's going to speculate. How do you not speculate about that? You just expect him to say no comment and everybody go, oh, okay. Okay, cool. Cool. You just said thanks for the last 10 years and then said no comment when asked about it. No, that's cool. That's normal. The whole thing was very weird how it played out. Even if it wasn't a goodbye, it sure as hell sounded like one. And Justin, we have the clip for Monday. We'll play it.
They always say a picture is worth 1,000 words. A Sean Miller no comment is worth 1,000 words. Mm-hmm. But then during Monday's press conference, Dom, like you just teased right there, he was asked about it once again. Was it a goodbye speech or was it not? And this is what Sean Miller had to say.
It certainly wasn't a goodbye speech. You know, I meant everything that I said. You know, you have to take into consideration the context. You know, I think part of me in that speech is, you know, you're overwhelmed by the fact that there's a crowd still in attendance. I mean, we lost to our rival that's, you know, that's a small part of it. Obviously, we finished our season. It's not a successful season by any standards other than to a large extent. I think we did about the best that we could, you know, so I think from that perspective, it's not like I'm pointing fingers at anybody on our team. If anything, I'm pointing finger at myself. But I meant what I said in terms of I can't imagine a fan base treating a coach any better than this fan base has treated our staff and me. And it's been from the beginning when I was the fourth coach in 4 years, 10 years ago, through a lot of great moments. And then the last 2 years where a lot of fan bases would change, easy to not feel good. But the group of people that come to our games in McHale, I think we've led the Pac-12 again in attendance, over 13,000. It's just it's overwhelming to see the support. And I'm not naive enough to think that it would be like that at every place. May not be like this at any other place. And the second part of me, you know, how I worded what I worded was, and it's also not the time to talk about the future. At that moment, I hadn't even talked to our team. And it's still not the time to talk about our future. I think, you know, for us and me, the coach, it's not fair to this group, this team, the guys like Ryan Luther and Justin Coleman, to talk about a period of time when they're no longer going to be here. So for us, I want to make sure that we address things in the present. And that was my best attempt. And if it was taken any other way, that certainly wasn't what I was trying to accomplish. But I think if you look carefully at my message and words, I can't thank the group, the fans, the people who are season ticket holders, and how much they've stood by this team and our staff in the last couple of years under some very trying times.
So, Dom, after hearing that clip from Sean Miller, he cleared up the air, right?
Right? He did, but I mean, it's just, you know, right now, sure, you can't say it was a goodbye right now, but again, it sounded like one. His comments right after it happened sure sounded like it. You know, it wasn't a goodbye. We don't know Sean Miller's intentions moving forward because he won't speak to them. And we're not going to sit here and speculate, but it sounded like a goodbye originally. He says it's not. We'll take his word for it for now and see what happens moving forward. Again, he's been notified that he will be subpoenaed into federal trial in April, so we'll see how that goes. I mean, especially if they get bounced from the Pac-12 tournament early, it's just going to be a sit and wait kind of deal, which we've had before. I mean, it's kind of been that way drawn out for the last 2 years here with all this federal business. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Sean Miller down the road. Moving on, Pac-12 tournaments this week.
Tourney, maybe.
Pac-12 tournaments this week. And again, it would have been so easy for Sean Miller after the game just to focus on the Pac-12 tournament. He didn't do it, said no comment. We'll focus on the Pac-12 tournament. Arizona has USC Wednesday at noon in the first round. Arizona's the 9 seed playing number 8 USC. Winner gets number one seeded Washington on Thursday at noon in Las Vegas. Justin,
Vegas,
what are their prospects going in against USC? It's a team they lost to in blowout fashion in LA earlier this season. I know Sean Miller talked about it a little bit on Monday in his press conference. Does Arizona have a chance?
I think they do. Honestly, I really think they do, because you look at what USC has done to end the season. I mean, they're on a skid similar to Arizona. I believe in the last about month or so, I mean, they've had just as many losses as Arizona. And so they're struggling big time right now. And the thing about the last matchup, Chase Jeter didn't play in that game. Remember, he was dealing with that back injury that he suffered against Oregon State the week prior. So with Chase Jeter back in the mix, a healthier Chase Jeter, I'm not going to say healthy because we just don't know, but with a healthier Chase Jeter, I think it gives Arizona a chance. They were out-rebounded by 12 in that game. And one thing I also recognize from that game, remember the front court? I always forget his last name.
Who are we talking about?
Vich.
Oh, Rakusevich?
Rakusevich. Uh-huh. Yeah. Rakusevich and Benny Boatwright. Mm-hmm. Think about how dominant those two were in the last game. And that was without Chase Jeter. So I think with Chase Jeter back in the mix, I think they'll be all right. I'm not going to sit here and say Arizona's going to win, but I like Arizona's chances this time around compared to last time. And I'm looking at USC's schedule to end the season. They're now riding a 4-game skid.
Mm-hmm. Arizona's last few games haven't been much better, but so. If we look at the front court as, what's going to decide this game, let's go back a few days and look at what they did against Arizona State. One player that Arizona actually defended pretty well this season, relatively to this player's outside body of work, other than Arizona games, Zion Cheatham didn't really go off against Arizona.
Yeah.
Taking into account how good of a year he's had, he was 4-10 against Arizona on Saturday, 13.6 rebounds. If they can hold one of the most talented players in the Pac-12 to that kind of day, they should be able to do it with a healthy Chase Jeter and Ryan Luther, Iverly, everyone in tow. They should be able to do it against Rakusevich and USC. Remember what Rakusevich did against the Wildcats earlier this season. You lit him up. Benny Boatwright, again, on that same page. So that'll probably be what it comes down to. Chase Jeter is going to have to play his best. I think Ryan Luther and Ira Lee are going to have to be as physical as USC's guys down low, which has been tough. It's been tough for Arizona to find to match opponents' physicality inside this season, no matter who's on the floor. I think Ira Lee brings a lot to the table in that regard. You saw it against ASU a little bit. He had that big dunk, which we've seen multiple times this year. He can kind of spark the offense for the Wildcats. They just haven't been able to sustain it, and that's the thing. I mean, they can get hot inside, or they can outwork somebody inside, but then you got to make shots, and when the shots aren't falling from the outside, we've seen Arizona struggle from the inside consistently this year. So look, they're going to have to play their best basketball of the season for 4 days in Vegas to have any hopes of playing after Vegas. But it starts with USC on Thursday, on Wednesday at noon in Las Vegas. It'll be, and then that's the thing too is, look, it's the Pac-12 tournament. Usually you have the four first round byes are usually they usually distance themselves from the rest of the field. I remember a couple of years ago when it was Arizona, UCLA, Oregon, and everybody else. There was no doubt. And, I think that was the year Arizona beat
Oregon
in the finals, yep. UCLA in the semis, then yep. Oregon in the finals. I think that was Miller's second title, right?
14-15. They won 2014-15. That was his first one.
And then 15, yeah.
And then, yeah, 16-17.
Yeah, okay. So, look, this year, it's wide open. With how poorly Washington's been playing in the last couple weeks, I don't think they're the favorite. I think they probably have the easiest second round game. Oregon State, Colorado, in a potential 4-5 matchup could be interesting. But outside of that, I mean, Washington's
tough, man. Because if Arizona they got to play Washington.
Well, no, I mean, and that's what I'm getting at. I mean, if Arizona plays well enough to get past USC, then they have to go play. Then they really have to play their best game of the year and go beat Washington. But that's what I'm saying. Washington is no clear cut favorite in this one. I guess, Justin, this is a good transition to get into who our favorites are.
Yeah,
I don't think it's Washington. They've played poorly down the stretch. They almost lost to Cal. They lost to Stanford, if I'm not mistaken. They lost to Cal.
Yeah.
Gave Cal their first win in Pac-12 play, and then almost lost to Stanford. They almost swept by the barrier schools.
And they lost to Oregon.
And, then lost to Oregon and didn't play that well against Oregon State. So they haven't been playing their best basketball. It's about getting – we all know March is about getting hot at the right time. Washington isn't really doing that. They might have peaked too early. With how hot some of the other teams in the Pac-12 are playing, I think there are more dangerous teams. I don't think you want to play the Oregon Ducks right now.
No way.
A team who plays well in Las Vegas, who has given the Arizona Wildcats and then Sean Miller, who owns Vegas, problems year in and year out when Arizona's at their best. I don't think you want to play the most talented team in the Pac-12 that I've said all year, who I believe is Arizona State. And when you look at those two teams, who I believe are the favorites, you can go, okay, well, if you're Arizona State, you just got blown out by Oregon a couple weeks ago. Blown out.
Yeah.
That game was in Tempe.
Yep.
So I don't know if there's a team you want to see less than Oregon right now. I still, if I had to pick, I think Arizona State is probably the team to beat when you take seeding out of it. I just think they're so talented. They're just ridiculously talented. I think they have more bodies that you need to worry about than any other team in the conference. But again, if they have to play Oregon, Justin, what round would that be if they play Oregon?
If Arizona has to play
Oregon? No. If Arizona State had to play Oregon.
That would be the semifinals.
That would be
Friday night.
Yeah, that might be the best game in the Pac-12 tournament, Arizona State, Oregon. Again, say that lightly because Oregon just blew them out a couple weeks ago. So, look, those are my two favorites. I don't think anyone's playing better than them right now. I don't think anyone's more talented than ASU, and I think Washington is kind of might have peaked early and coming in on a down last couple of weeks.
Bruce Pasco was on the radio show on mm-hmm. ESPN Tucson on Monday, and he said this. I thought this was very interesting. It depends on when you're picking favorites. It depends on which teams are you talking about, because certain teams have to make a 4-game run where other teams have to make a 3-game run. So if we're talking from a 4-game run standpoint, so that's the Wednesday afternoon slate or the Wednesday slate, mm-hmm. you look at USC, Arizona, Colorado, Cal, UCLA, Stanford, Oregon, and Wazoo. I like Oregon because Oregon's won 6 consecutive games. Like, they are on a tear right now.
Right, and you look at schedules again. I mean, they open up against Washington State. That's a pretty easy win for them. And then they go to go play Utah. I like that matchup
for
Oregon.
I like that matchup, too.
Exactly.
So, I mean, Oregon, I think, is going to cakewalk to that semifinal matchup against ASU. And, you know, who's to say ASU doesn't get bounced by UCLA? Stanford has arguably the best player in the conference, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But KZ Ocpala is an NBA player. Who's to say he doesn't put Stanford on his back and carries them all the way? So, I mean, I'm looking at that bottom half of the bracket. I think you can make the assumption that ASU and Oregon, they're going to play each other in that semifinal matchup. But then you look at Arizona's side. Man, if they can get past Washington, well, first they got to get through USC. If they can get past USC and Washington, I mean, I like Arizona's chances against teams like Oregon State, Colorado, and California. Oregon State, though, that's tough because it's hard to beat a team twice in a season. You know,
three times
because they won. Yeah, they won on the road too. So.
A good team, yeah, you know, relative to the Pac-12, a good team. Just looking at this first round of games, I don't know if Oregon over Washington State's probably the only one I'd put in Sharpie. I mean, the other games, I think you said it. I think Ocpala could carry Stanford past UCLA. I could see UCLA going in and beating ASU in the next round. I don't know if Stanford can beat ASU, but UCLA can get hot, as we've seen in Vegas before. Those two games are, or excuse me, that. Okay, so if I'm putting Oregon in, that. UCLA Stanford game is pretty up in the air. I wouldn't rule out Cal beating Colorado. I mean, there's no team in the first round. There's no team in the first round.
Cal beat Washington.
I know. So why not Colorado? There's no team that did. Cal won another game, didn't they?
Yeah, they beat. Man,
they won another game. I think they finished with 2 wins.
Yeah, they definitely finished with a couple of wins. It might have been against Stanford. Or it might have been against like Oregon State or somebody, but
no, I mean that's my point is I don't think it's as set in stone as people think this first round. I think any team in any game, with the exception of the Oregon Washington State game, I wouldn't mark down as a for sure thing. Anyone can get hot right now. It's literally all it's about. We haven't really seen many teams in the Pac-12 this season, with the exception of maybe Washington, get hot and ride a long winning streak. And of course, Washington certainly is not on a winning streak anymore. So. It's going to be interesting. I think any team can win, and that's what we've said all year. If the Pac-12 is going to be this bad, this lousy, if they're going to have this many crummy teams just scrapping it out in crappy games all year, at least have an entertaining March. If they can just play, look, if there are a ton of upsets, great. If it's good basketball, yeah, that's the thing, is it's not going to be good basketball. But if it's entertaining, just entertain us, will
it's
you?
Competitive.
Entertain it. We're in Las Vegas. Just entertain us.
That's a good city for entertainment.
Entertain us.
March 13th through the 16th at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. The Wildcaster will be out there providing all the best coverage. Mm-hmm. But Dom, since we only have a few minutes left here, we're going to talk some Pac-12 teams. Most recently, or earlier Monday morning, they announced the first and the second team. Cedric Bearfield from Utah. Tyler Bay from Colorado, Benny Bowright from USC, Zylan Cheatham from ASU, Robert Franks from Washington State, Jalen Noel from Washington, KZ Opala from Stanford, Matisse Thybul from Washington, Trace Tinkle from Oregon State, and McKinley Wright the fourth. You better make sure you put the fourth at the end, from Colorado. That's the first team of the conference. And then you have the second team, which is Lou Dort from ASU, Jalen Hans from UCLA, Remy Martin from ASU, Stephen Thompson Jr. from Oregon State, and Chris Wilkes from UCLA. So no Arizona guys for the first time since when, Dom? Do you remember?
82-83.
Wow.
First time, and that takes into account the all-defensive team and the
Freshman team.
So first time since 1982-83 that Arizona didn't place a single player on any Pac-12 all-conference team. Brandon Williams was named honorable mention all-freshman team this season.
A few votes.
Sean Miller talked about it Monday, said that if Brandon Williams didn't miss six games, he believes he would have been on the all-freshman team. I don't know over who. The all-freshman team was pretty stout this year. I mean, there were a lot. That's the thing, too. Looking at those two first and second team and this all-freshman team. All-freshman team is Timmy Allen of Utah, Moses Brown of UCLA, Lou Dort from ASU, CJ Ellaby of Washington State, and Louis King of Oregon. That's, I mean, who does Brandon Williams get in over, even if he plays those six games? Maybe Ellaby? I don't know.
I'll tell you how Brandon Williams can get on that team.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge Moses Brown to a free throw shooting contest. That's the only way that he could get onto the All Pac-12 freshman.
That's the thing, though. That was my takeaway. I think snubs, you could probably look at Remy Martin, might have deserved an all first team bid, a nod, maybe over McKinley Wright. By the way, Trace Tinkle of Oregon State, the only player on this year's team who has won it twice now, been on the all first team twice.
Yeah.
He was named to it last year. Matisse Thybul, if he sticks around, he'll probably get that honor again. I mean, you say that about pretty much anyone on here. That's the thing with the Pac-12 is looking at these teams, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of, you know, for as bad as the Pac-12's been, there are a lot of dudes. There are a lot of dudes who play good basketball. You have Akpala, who has been projected as high as a high-end first-round pick in the NBA draft.
Like a top 10 pick.
Yeah, lottery pick. And they have no shortage of players.
I'll never forget how surprised we were. We were looking up NBA mock drafts.
Yeah, and KZ Akpala was right there. I think it was a few nights after he torched Arizona in that first game. So, again, I mean, they have no shortage of talent. It's just no team has been able to put it all together. There's not an excess of talent on any one team. But Brandon Williams, I mean, if he plays those extra six games, with him being on Arizona, he might get on that all-freshman team. I just don't know over who. I mean, there's no one on that list that you can point to and say there's no way he should be there.
Yeah.
Especially in comparison to Brandon Williams. But, yeah, I mean, first time Arizona hasn't had a player on the team since 82-83, and that's pretty spectacular. It's a testament to how good Arizona's been at the forefront of the Pac-12 for years. I mean, we've heard all season long coaches talk about how Arizona's still the target. The one team that everybody wants to beat, whether it's at McHale Center or you're hosting them, everyone's out to get Arizona year in and year out, even in a down year, even in a year for the first time in decades that they didn't have an all-conference player. Coaches have talked about all year. Yeah, you saw Bobby Hurley do it twice this year.
Yeah.
Talk about what it meant to beat Arizona. And another interesting fact here today that we found out when they announced the Player of the Week honors, Arizona, it's the first time since 82-83, again, going back to, but if you've noticed that trend this year, the infamous Ben Lindsay year, that's when pretty much all the losing streaks, all the bad omens go back to 82-83 for Arizona. It was the last time that they didn't have a Pac-12 Player of the Week before this season. They did not have a single Player of the Week this year. Also worth noting, Arizona has 100 Pac-12 Players of the Week since they've been handing out the award. Next best team is UCLA with 78. So, we're just trying to put how bad the season's been into perspective. It's really been decades since Arizona's had this bad of a year. You know the narrative with the Pac-12 and how bad they've been in the conference, but it really is...
I mean, bad.
I don't want to say rock bottom. I don't want to say rock bottom yet, but I mean, it's there. I mean, they're that bad. Looking into some conference awards, that they were handing out on Pac-12 Networks on Monday night. Jalen Noel of Washington won Player of the Year.
Boy,
didn't have that good of a game against Arizona. I think he had like 12 points.
Yeah, he was pretty quiet, but I mean, he's all year long. He's mm-hmm. been.
Oh yeah.
He's been one of the best guards. He's mm-hmm. been one of the best players in the Pac-12.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he is the best player in the Pac-12 because he won Pac-12
player of the year. Like, you can't, it is no longer debatable. He is the best player in the Pac-12, Jalen Noel of Washington. Defensive player of the year, Justin, you know who this is.
Matisse Thybulle
for the second straight year. Pretty spectacular when you see his body of work this season, especially in relation to last year. He got better. I mean, he was defensive player of the year a year ago and got better this season. Really, the two anchors of Washington are Noel and Matisse Thybulle. Without them, they're a completely different team, and their improvement has been tough to speak enough about. I mean, Matisse Thybulle, he's a guy that you would like to see at Arizona because of how good he is defensively.
Yeah.
And he's something that Arizona, I think, has missed all season. Freshman of the year.
Ooh. This is going to get interesting.
Who would you have given it to, Justin?
I probably would have guessed Dort.
It was Lou Dort.
It was Lou Dort. Yep. Okay.
Really all year. I mean, early in the season, he was in the running for Pac-12 Player of the Year, but comes out with Freshman of the Year. Well-earned for Lou Dort, who carried ASU to a sweep of Arizona for the first time since James Harden did it.
Beard.
Most improved player.
MIP.
Had four. Yeah, I got all my all my abbreviations over here. I got POI, DPOI, POI, MIP. And sixth man. I don't know what it was. Sixth man of the year, Smoy.
Sixth man. Smoy.
Most improved player. He had four double-doubles a season ago. He had 14 this season. It's Tyler Bay out of Colorado.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, 4 to 14 double-doubles. I mean, again, we're talking about improvement. No player in the Pac-12 probably had as much improvement as Tyler Bay, and he is now the most improved player, so it
absolutely
is official.
Absolutely.
No one had more improvement than Tyler Bay in the Pac-12. And sixth man of the year, it was Donnie Tillman of Utah.
Nice.
I think he had a good game against Arizona did they play in Salt Lake this year?
Yes, they did.
Okay, so I think that was the game.
Not better than Parker Van Dyke.
No, not better than Parker Van Dyke, who was unconscious, couldn't miss from three. How many do we know how many he hit?
It was too many to count. He was in the Sam Decker Elite Eight.
Don't bring up Sam Decker.
I'm sorry, Arizona fans. I'm sorry.
Coach of the Year. You really could have narrowed it down to maybe three guys: Kristoriak from Utah and Hopkins from Washington.
Tinkle
is up there probably. Maybe. Tinkle. I saw Bruce Pascoe talk earlier about Bobby Hurley being in there, which I don't like for the simple fact that I think ASU underperformed this year with how much talent they have. Mike Hopkins is your 2018-19 Coach of the Year for the Pac-12. So it's, I mean, again, a lot of times it goes to the best team, the coach on the best team, and it was Washington from the very start of Pac-12 play, even from the start of the non-conference season. Washington has been the best team in the Pac-12, and it's Mike Hopkins. The wonders he's done at Washington the last couple of years have been pretty impressive. Coach of the Year, Mike Hopkins.
And he's given them kind of an identity that Lorenzo Romar didn't have. Lorenzo Romar was a great coach at Washington.
Absolutely.
Let's not deny
Absolutely.
That. But Mike Hopkins is the guy that's, let's play some defense. Let's play gritty. Mm-hmm. And when you have something like that in the Pac-12, you can thrive. And that's why I think Sean Miller has had success in the conference, because he's always preached defense. His best teams have always been defensive first teams. So I think Mike Hopkins, he's going to be the Pac-12 for a lot longer, unless a ACC team or another big time team wants to give him an opportunity. But it's cool to see Mike Hopkins do his thing in the Pac.
Before we wrap up here, Justin, on a fine Monday night in the Pac-12,
and Hopkins could actually be facing the Arizona Wildcats in the second round of the Pac-12 tournament. So, interesting times here in the Conference of Champions. Dom, any final words?
Justin, I know you're going to Vegas this week. Have a good time.
Thank you. I will.
With Bruce Pascoe. It'll be good. I mean, look.
I might be back Thursday morning.
I said it earlier. If there's one thing we want out of the Pac-12 this year, it's some excitement. Vegas is usually no shortage of that.
Yes. And I'm curious to see how the Arizona fans show up. I know this year, usually, you're like, yeah, we're going to have a weekend in Vegas. We're gonna have fun. We're going to put our livers to test drinking so much alcohol.
It's usually spring break, too.
And, yeah.
Which it's not this year.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see.
I expect ASU's on spring break, so I imagine they'll have a good showing. But yeah, fan-wise, I don't know if Arizona fans are going to show up. I guess we'll have to just wait and see. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Pac-12 tournament getting ready to get started. Arizona Wildcats will take on USC Wednesday afternoon at noon. You can follow the Wildcaster on Twitter, at the Wildcaster. You can like us on Facebook. You can check out Tucson.com and the Wildcaster app for all your live coverage. For Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.